Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network for this Thursday, July the 6th, 2023. Thank you for listening to AFR. Joining me in studio is Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, Tim.
Chris Woodward.
Good morning.
And in Kansas City is our good friend, Dr. Ray Pritchard. How you doing, Ray?
Hey, I'm doing great, Tim, and how are you today?
Doing well here in Tupelo, MS. And now you've been traveling, right?
I'm in the midst of a crazy travel schedule. We were on the Oregon coast last week at Cannon Beach Conference Center, home for a few days, and then off next week to Muskegon, Michigan, to Maranatha Bible and Missionary Conference, and the week after that to Word of Life in upstate New York.
And we have a lot of listeners in the Muskegon area.
Oh, we do. We've got a station right there in Muskegon, right. And every time I go to Maranatha, AFR folks come by and say hello. Yeah, it's a beautiful
now,
part of the
conference. If folks want to go to that conference, do you know how they would register or find out more information?
Well, there are two things. Number one, if you want to formally attend the conference, you just contact Maranatha Bible and Missionary Conference and they'll hook you up. But the services, all of them are open to the public. So if you're in the southwestern Michigan, Muskegon area, you can drop by for any of the services next week. They're free and they're open to the public.
What's it called and where is it?
Maranatha Bible and Missionary Conference. And it's right, Tim, it's right on the shores of Lake Michigan. It's in beautiful Muskegon, Michigan. Just a really gorgeous part of the country.
Absolutely.
Great, like a radio ad.
Great setting.
It does, doesn't it?
Well, Michigan has some great ads. Mm-hmm. The tourism I'm talking about, it's called Pure Michigan.
Hmm. And Tim Allen,
he may hail from Michigan, the Wolverine State, or
yes, well, the Michigan Wolverines, right?
Yeah, but Michigan State fans object to it.
And they're the Spartans, right?
Yeah, they're the Spartans, and it seems like to me Michigan is the maybe a good trivia question.
I don't know the answer to that.
Seems like it's a Wolverine State, but maybe I'm wrong about that. Anyway, well, safe travels, Ray, and glad you're traveling the country, teaching the Word of God, the Bible, to all those that get to hear you do that. All right, a lot to talk about today. Let me just mention a couple things real quick. One is our Holy Land trip in March 2024. We've had overwhelming response, and so we're going to be full, I'm telling you, in probably 2 weeks.
Wow.
It's just been, I've never seen anything like this before. Usually we have our trip and we fill up in October, right?
But we're 9 months out.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we're going to be full. We take three buses. Okay. And we are able to do that because we have three local guides so you feel like you're on a trip with 50 people, mm-hmm. in essence, because that's who you're traveling around with. But I go, my wife Allison goes, and Walker and Wesley, my sons, we serve as the hostess, mm-hmm. I guess you could say. And we have our local guides who do all the, tell us where we are, what we're seeing. They're Israelis, obviously. So, it's just been stunning, the response. But I guess it shouldn't be because, 2 years Israel was closed for COVID. Mm-hmm. And now it's wide open. Everything's back to normal. There are no shots required, COVID or otherwise, to get into Israel. So, and you got a lot of baby boomers, Ray, retiring and ready to do the bucket list thing.
So, well, there's no trip in the world better than a trip to the Holy Land. I've been there a number of times myself. And to walk where Jesus walked, to go to the land of the Bible, right. There's no other trip in the world like that.
Amen. So I'm just saying, if you've been thinking, well, maybe I want to go with Tim to the Holy Land, and it's time to make a decision. Now, there are other people who go to the Holy Land who, there's plenty of people who go take tours to the Holy Land, other ministries and local pastors and such. But if you want to go with us in March 2024, then the moment of decision is at hand. Okay. TWHolyLand.com is the website. TWHolyLand.com. TWHolyLand.com. I guess some people say W, but I just say TWHolyLand.com, and I think most people understand what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so you're listening to Today's Issues on AFR. All right, Christopher, what do you have?
Well, the Secret Service is doing a deep dive to try to figure out who is the owner of that cocaine that was found a few days ago at the White House. Someone somehow entered the West Wing, which is an area used by all sorts of people, and left a bag of cocaine at the White House, to which they evacuated. They didn't come back to pick it up. They didn't come back. They didn't leave a return address or anything.
Somebody left a laptop one time at a. Did you hear that story?
I've heard that.
They never came back to pick it up.
Yes. Yeah. So the Secret Service is doing everything from like a DNA test. They're looking for fingerprints and all this stuff to try to figure out the person that owns or owned this cocaine found at the White House. The Biden administration is staying mum on this. As a matter of fact, yesterday during an unrelated White House event, a bunch of reporters were yelling questions at President Biden about this cocaine situation, and he's just all smiles, not answering anything, while a lady that works for the White House told, thank you, you know, let's go about our day, that kind of thing. But that's not stopping a lot of other people from talking about it, and I've got a good bit of audio here. Let's begin with former White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany. She knows a thing or two about this entrance as well as the security there, and she's very concerned about this cocaine situation or cocaine gate. Clip one.
There is an entrance between the old executive office building, which is where the younger employees work, the vast majority of employees, and the West Wing. There is a road in between called West Executive, and there is a tent coming out of the West Wing. A lot of people go through there. Staff goes through there. The press does not, so you can rule out the press at this point. Guests of staff go through there. My mom's been through there. My dad, my husband,
was
my
daughter Blake. Was she there Sunday night?
No, we did not bring cocaine with us when my family paraded through there. But it is a heavily trafficked area. There are cubbies there. I've got to believe this was discovered rather quickly because there's a Secret Service officer
right
sitting right there.
Right there.
So it couldn't have been there for days and days. It had to have been there for, I would say, minutes before someone took notice.
So let's.
All right, so let me. This sounds like
where do we even start with this?
I know,
story?
Right? This is so bizarre. So, the Secret Service picks up a bag of cocaine
at the White House.
A small bag, I'm assuming, at the White House. What day did this happen?
Sunday.
And what? And I still don't understand exactly how that became public knowledge. I don't know.
We played the clip yesterday.
Yeah.
A reporter picked up on the hazmat team talking to somebody. And so that's how it was made public, we believe.
I guess it isn't every day a hazmat team walking down the hall, huh?
Yeah.
But anyway, they're doing a DNA test to, well that, provide them with an answer on who in the world this was?
Well, they're doing a DNA test on the bag, the little baggy thing that the cocaine was in.
Yeah.
Assuming the person's fingerprints
right.
are on that bag.
Right.
Here's my take on this. If we don't hear the results of all of this quickly,
mm-hmm.
then the owner may be somebody that is well known. You understand where I'm going with this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
If this takes weeks for us to find out who the person is, then I'm going to be very suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
Put it that way. But if it's a Joe Smuck who just happened to be in the area, we'll know about it probably within a few days.
Now, Karine Jean-Pierre, the White House spokesperson, whose name I have down.
Yes.
Had after a year it took me. I want to ask you this. Has she responded to this?
She did yesterday.
Not saying much about it. I have a different piece of audio from her on a different story.
Okay.
What she said yesterday was, the investigation is underway, and I don't want to get ahead of the investigation, so right. I'm not going to talk about it.
I fully expected her, Ray, to say this. I refer you to the Food and Drug Administration. Because she's great at referring you to other agencies, which are not going to give you an answer to the question right. you're asking of her.
Exactly.
But she's referring people yeah. always to other agencies.
You know yeah. how you can, like, save money on your satellite bill if you refer a friend?
Yeah.
Like, right. She probably gets satellite for free.
Yeah. Her favorite phrases are, I want to be clear, which is followed by mud.
Right.
And then she will refer you to a agency where you will be put on hold and hear elevator music and never yeah. get an answer to your question. So it's like a black hole. She's into some black hole of lack of information. Anyway, well, I guess we'll find out, like you said, Fred, whose cocaine bag was, what, they drop it in the hallway? What happened there?
It was in a corner. I mean, I'm trying kinda to weird. Imagine if you're the person, obviously, you know, you're carrying this bag. Some, you would think that person would be super careful. They're in the White House.
You would think.
And all of a sudden you just drop this
thing. If they're already on drugs, they're not thinking straight. That's the only explanation I can mentally come up with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, who brings cocaine to the White House? And who?
I know. No, I'm only kidding.
Okay. All right. The name that shall not be mentioned, but who does this? And then who just casually drops it? Walks away free. I mean, that's almost like dropping off your laptop and forgetting to go pick it up.
But a boom.
I often say every time Fred goes away that something huge happens. And in this particular case, Fred leaves. He leaves the right. country. And then we find cocaine at the White House.
Okay. Cocaine gate rolls on.
Right. I do say I don't think we're ever going to find out who did it, if it's a high-profile, well-known person. And I say that because media outlets that seemingly have the most resources to really find out who it is and go to print or air with it, we're not going to find out based on the fact that a lot of mainstream media types have been spending a couple of days now joking about this very topic. And I'm not making it up. Here now is personalities from CBS, CNN, and then MSNBC joking about the coke at the White House. Clip 3.
They're kind of blaming it on the tourists.
On the tourists?
The public area?
Yes, are people careless with their cocaine?
You know, it's an expensive drug.
So many questions there. So
a lot of questions. We are not quite to the, like, Jimmy Carter level where multiple right. officials in the White House are in trouble and one person resigned. But
I don't want to hear from, President Biden or Trump. I would like to hear from one person in particular.
Who?
That Bill that used to sit on Capitol Hill from Schoolhouse Rock.
I would like to know blow by blow who was responsible for this.
Too soon.
There is no too soon on this.
Too soon?
No one was injured as far as
Thank
we
you,
know.
Kate.
And it's an illicit drug at the White House. Why can't you actually have a bit of fun with it?
I can't even fathom anything like this having been found before in the West Wing, and I go back to the 70s at the White House. So this is pretty, pretty wild.
That was Andrea Mitchell of MSNBC at the very end.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next story, Chris.
Let me find this right here. There is a story. Trying to pick what I want to do.
You
here.
Thought we'd milk that for 30 more minutes or something?
Nah.
Surprised you there, Chris?
I did. I had a lot of audio.
Cocaine and the White House mystery.
Let's do.
Maybe it was Colonel Mustard.
It could have been.
You know, with the bag in the kitchen.
Okay. I do have this. I do have this other story. A lot of news outlets are going from the cocaine story to the Ben and Jerry's fallout. Mm-hmm. You know, Ben and Jerry's, for those that haven't paid attention to the news much in the last few days, they put out some statements saying the U.S. is on stolen Native American land and therefore we shouldn't celebrate U.S. independence and all that makes America great. And as you might expect, a lot of people are upset by this because Ben & Jerry's is known for doing this kind of thing. But this is a bridge too far in many people's minds to the point they're now saying we're
no longer. A bridge over stolen land.
Yes, there you go. I see what you did there.
Yeah.
A lot of people are upset by this, understandably so, saying, you know, enough is enough. We're done with Ben & Jerry's. And it's the umpteenth company to do something really stupid. But a lot of people are saying because they had success over Bud Light, Target, boycotts.
Do you have sound for this or do you want me to?
I do not.
So we're the sound?
Yes.
Yep. We do have sound.
We do have some sound. I'm sorry. It's South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, clip 7.
Two things to be clear about today. I love ice cream. So in my family, we bought it by the 5-gallon buckets. That's how much we ate ice cream every night before we went to bed. Number two, I'm not going to listen to a bunch of liberal Vermont businessmen who think they know everything about this country and haven't studied our history. Right now, Mount Rushmore is the greatest symbol of our freedom and history of the United States of America. We can learn from the men on that mountain. We can do better. But boy, they led us through some challenging times. And I think Americans in this country need some inspiration, and we can gain it from a monument like that. We should be proud of America and knock off what Ben and Jerry's is doing. They don't have any idea what they're doing.
If you missed it, okay, and Ray, you can comment on this first. The Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream Company, which is Governor Noem said right there, is owned by two fellows from Vermont who are uber liberal. They're like to the left of
Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
By a lot.
To them, Bernie Sanders is a conservative. And so they made a statement on July 4th that America was built on the stolen land from the Indians. And therefore, I guess what they're saying is we're an illegitimate country. The irony, Ray, here is they're making a killing off capitalism while their businesses are on stolen land.
Uh-huh.
If you buy their argument, what do you say about
it? It's an ice cream company. It makes as much sense for them to make comments about American history as like a beer company, you know, hiring some trans activist and thinking that's going to help them. Look, the only thing I can say about Ben and Jerry's is I do like Chunky Monkey ice cream, and I haven't had it in a Chunky Monkey ice cream. Okay. I mean, that's really, what do we want from our ice cream company except good ice cream? Keep your political commentary to yourself.
I know. I don't know how. Now, the Ben and Jerry's, I've seen them at the grocery store.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, but yes. Maybe that's the only place they offer their ice cream, but do they have stores standalone like Baskin Robbins does
on the East Coast?
Yes. I've seen some in the South, but generally
they do.
In a bigger city, in like a mall or strip mall.
Come to think of it, I too have seen some of their standalone stores.
It's pricey.
Anyway, so
I would just advise Kristi Noem that eating 5 pounds of ice cream before bed is not healthy.
We've all tried it. We've all done it, right?
Five pounds of ice cream.
I tell you, the summertime with homemade ice cream is
homemade ice cream.
I could
Hard to beat.
Joe Biden eats ice cream like every day, from what we're told.
Oh well, yeah, he. Yeah, that's his stage of life.
Whether or not he likes Chunky Monkey, I don't know. That's for Ray to figure out.
Yeah.
I think he's a vanilla guy.
All right. So the Ben and Jerry's, I would, you know, I don't think many of our listeners buy Ben and Jerry's anyway. But you could go into the whole idea of stolen land, as we've said before, talking about America.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you something. The history of the world since the beginning of time is stolen, quote, stolen land.
Yes.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So if we want to play that game, we can go all the way back to, like I said, the dawn of civilization and find somebody. Because everybody's land was taken over by somebody else. You know when he talked about the Indians or the Native Americans? Guess what? Before the white Europeans ever came here, the Indian tribes were killing each other. And you know what they were doing? They were taking each other's land.
They were stealing each other's land.
Yeah. Exactly. All day, every day.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
They're very nomadic. In fact, our own Bishop Jackson was dealing with this story yesterday, and he said they were nomads. They moved all over the place all the time. They were in battles between different tribes. I mean, and so this, you know, various groups come out with this idea of stolen land all the time.
Right.
It just. And
but guess what? They don't give up their stolen land.
Mm-mm.
If Benny Jerry truly believe this, they should shut down their corporate offices in Vermont, you know, and give it back to the Indians if they really had conviction about what they're talking about.
Yeah.
All right, Christopher. By the way, let me tell folks they can watch our show on Facebook if they want to. And we have our that's Facebook Live. Just type in Today's Issues, and we post the stories that we talk about there too. Today's Issues on Facebook, and we also have our own live video streaming service, which you can use that we own and operate here. So we're not going to ever cancel ourselves. Streaming.afa.net. Streaming.afa.net. All right, Chris, next story.
Well, this factors in with a couple of things, drug use and possibly eating way too much ice cream far too often. 77% of America's young people today are not eligible to serve in the military for reasons including they're overweight, they have a history of drug use, or they have mental and physical health problems. What's really interesting, and I'll share this link here in a second, military families, which apparently make up like 80% of U.S. Army recruits, are reportedly telling their children not to sign up with the military, especially if there are families in the South, because the military has gone woke and doesn't appreciate us and where we live.
I knew that would happen. And that's, you know, that's going to have, Ray, the recruiting in the military being down in such dramatic levels, that's going to have, that's going to show up somewhere, right, down the road.
You know, we've said before, you know, go woke, go broke,
right?
That's one thing for a company. But it's extremely dangerous when our armed forces are deliberately going woke. Why should we be surprised that young people in droves are turning away from the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the Marines? When they see what is being done by the leaders of the military, I mean, it used to be a patriotic thing for a young person to volunteer to serve in the military. Now the numbers are way down. But when you have all this trans sanity stuff, this trans madness in the military, you can't blame the young people for saying, I don't want that.
And it's not only that. The controversy over forcing our military members to get vaccines or lose their jobs, that was a factor also. But also, you know, on the obesity front, this is how far down our military has gone. They're bringing people in who are obese, and for about 3 months, they try to get them to lose weight before they're ready to go to boot camp. All right, boot camp used to be the entry. Mm. Now they've got like a three-month period where they try to get these kids to lose weight. So there's that, there's the vaccination, there's the transgender stuff. But also, the Biden administration early on says, we're going to hunt out people who have conservative points of view. We're going to target them.
I remember that.
You know? So it's all this junk that the Biden administration has brought in. They're reaping what they've sown.
Yeah, and again, it's going to show up, quote, on the battlefield sometime because you can't keep miss your recruiting numbers by 25% or whatever it is.
Year after year after year.
Right, for all branches of the military. Another thing I've heard, and that you mentioned this, Chris, a lot of families are legacy, military legacy families, I would call them.
Yes.
And most all of them are conservative.
Yes.
And patriotic. And they don't go for this woke garbage.
Yep.
That's being promoted from the Pentagon.
Yep.
And so I've heard a number of people have told me in the last year or two, you know, I was in the Army, my son was in the Army, but my grandson, we're telling him don't go.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to be subject to all this stuff, including the forced COVID vaccination shots.
Yes.
Which was insane.
Yes. Especially now that we know the real story.
Yeah. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Lots more to talk about. We got an interview with Dr. Kenyon Knapp coming up. He tells a fascinating story you're going to want to hear. Stay with us.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening. Hey, we've got 1,200 folks coming into Tupelo today, Ray, for a 3-day conference, Marriage Family Life Conference. We do this, we've been doing this like 4 years. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of folks are stopping by to say hello and touring our studios here at American Family Radio, and we're waving at them. I feel like we're fishing in an aquarium. And, don't you?
They're That's
looking,
right.
Or either we're the monkeys at the zoo, and they're looking through the glass to say, waving at us there. So anyway, it's a delight to have so many people in town to be at the Marriage Family Life Conference, and many of them come by and see us here. Well, I'm Tim with Fred and Chris and Ray's in Kansas City, and joining us in studio is Dr. Kenyon Knapp, K-N-A-P-P. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Kenyon, I'm going to call you Ken.
Okay. That's good.
Okay, because we've known each other a long time, and it's that's a lot of syllables to repeat over and over and over again. So I'm going to go Ken, you go Tim. How about that?
That sounds good.
So you're on staff at Liberty University, right?
Yes, sir. I've been there a little over 5 years.
What do you do there?
I'm the dean for the School of Behavioral Sciences, where we have psychology, counseling, social work, and pastoral counseling.
Okay, so under the School of Behavioral Sciences is what now? What did you say?
Psychology, counseling, social work, and pastoral counseling.
Not pest. Pastoral.
Correct.
I thought you said pastoral.
I said it wrong. I
okay, no, it's okay. And so, wow, so you're the dean.
Yes, sir.
Man, congratulations.
I'm grateful to have the job. It's a joy to be there. And
now, how many students are at Liberty University now?
Altogether, close to 135,000.
Wow. That would include on campus, which is what, 12, 15?
No, we're close to 16,000.
16,000 on campus
yeah.
students in Lynchburg. Mm-hmm. And maybe you have other branches too then. And then I've always known that Liberty University had like one of the largest online student bodies in the world, right?
They do. It's the largest Christian college on earth, to my knowledge. What about not Earth? Well, I don't know about that. You have to ask you about okay. that.
Maybe Venus or somewhere like that. All right. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
You did a devotion for our staff here this morning. Now, I want you to share a personal family story with our listeners that's fascinating to me that you shared a devotion this morning. But you've got a new book out, right?
I do.
What's it called?
It's called Healthy Depression. It came out about 3 weeks ago.
Healthy Depression. What made you write on this topic here?
Well, I've been a counselor, a licensed professional counselor for over 25 years, and I've worked with thousands of people. And of course, depression is the most common issue that people run into in the mental health fields. And what I found is that so many times with depression, people assume that the depression is the illness, that it's like this horrible thing, you have to fix it. But what I found over and over again is that sometimes depression can be a healthy thing because it's a symptom, not the illness. And so you have to always distinguish that, of course, illness is bad, but symptoms are good. And symptoms can lead you to what the true problem is, and then you can solve it and be better. And but so many times today, we just treat the symptom. We just medicate it or things like that. And this past year alone in America, we spent about $35 billion on psychotropic medications. Hmm. And some of that was great. I mean, like some of it is very much needed. But
what are you talking about? Like, give me an example.
Oh, like Prozac is probably the best known, antidepressant medication. And there's Zoloft and other ones.
All right. Explain. And I don't want to spend too much time on this because there's so much to talk about. But
sure.
By the way, Healthy Depression is the name of the book. And if people want to buy it, how can they do that?
Well, it's on all the major outlets.
Okay.
Amazon, Barnes & Noble. ChristianBook.com, or the publisher itself is WipfandStock.com, which is WIPFANDSTOCK.com. So
I'm sure people got that.
I know I said it too fast.
but think about anywhere books are sold, basically.
Yes,
right?
Sir. They sure can. They can get an ebook version or gotcha. Paper version.
Yeah. Ebook. Okay. And we're talking to Dr. Kenyon, K-E-N-Y-O-N-C, Knapp, K-A-K-N-A-P-P. And he is the dean of the School of Behavioral Sciences at Liberty University. All right, let me ask you this about depression, because I think the common man's understanding of depression is different than the clinical definition of depression, and that often causes some confusion. Because and you know, all of us have our own problems somewhere, right?
Absolutely.
Because we're human, we're fallen, we're sinful, so something's not right somewhere in every one of our lives.
Absolutely.
However, with depression, I think most people think, well, man, my team lost. I'm in the dumps here.
It happens in the South a lot.
Yeah, I'm depressed, man. They're not going to recover. Doesn't look like they're going to win any games. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, my my brother was mean to me, you know, and I don't know. I'm depressed about that. Mm-hmm. So, I don't mean to make, I guess I am making light of trivial things that we say we're depressed about, but we're talking about something that is, chemical? Is spiritual? What is it that you deal with in all these counseling of people who suffer from this kind of depression?
Well, hopefully all of the above.
Okay. I
mean, because it can be chemical. It can be spiritual. It can be non-clinical. I mean, you know, there's, like you said, people can have a bad day or your team loses or whatever the case may be. But it can be debilitating. Like when people develop more clinical depression, you know, they lose perspective on life. They, in bad cases, severe cases, they even become suicidal.
What does that look like? Do they demonstrate, are there two or three things that people demonstrate publicly when they're depressed, when they're clinically depressed?
Absolutely.
And they're right, you're next. You get a question. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, people who are severely clinically depressed, they withdraw from other people.
Okay.
You know, they'll often lose enjoyment in life. We call that anhedonia.
Okay.
Where they don't want to enjoy things they previously would enjoy,
okay,
whether it's hanging out with friends or they'll sleep more to avoid life.
Should you be worried that person's suicidal if they start demonstrating that on a ongoing basis?
I mean, yeah, I would say so. I mean, generally it's better to err on the side of caution, you know, than to ignore it. If they start to be like that, they start avoiding people, their patterns in life start changing dramatically, you definitely want to check it out.
Ray, go ahead.
Dr. Knapp, this whole question of depression, there's a lot of debate about it in Christian circles. Is it a sin for a Christian to struggle with depression? Or, well, let me just leave it there. Let me let you jump in and say, because that is a question you hear people say, well, if you were depressed, it's a sin or there's sin in your life. How do you begin to answer that?
Well, you know, the man after God's own heart said, "Why so downcast, O my soul?" How many times in the book of Psalms? I mean, a lot.
Right. A lot.
Yeah, and there's
lots. You would have diagnosed him with depression, probably, right? I mean, really.
Well, I don't know if the DSM was around back then, but we would have done something.
Right.
And, and there's other people in the Bible, too. You think of Saul, for example, David as well, where he went to Saul and played the harp, and it said that the music helped him to cope better. And so there's lots of examples. I wouldn't say that it's necessarily a sin. Now, it may be caused by sin, but it's not necessarily sin in and of itself. I mean, emotions are emotions are emotions. And, you know,
can a traumatic experience trigger ongoing depression?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like the loss of a loved one?
Yes.
Okay. That you've seen that many times?
Oh, yeah. I've seen it dozens and dozens of times.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're talking to Kenyon C. Knapp. Dr. Kenyon C. Knapp, he is the dean of the School of Behavioral for the School of Behavioral Sciences at Liberty University. His book is it's fair to say this is a biblical Christian response to to depression.
Yes, sir. It's my best shot at that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, no, I haven't finished it yet because I was reading it and got depressed in chapter 3. I just put it down
because
couldn't take it. No, I'm just kidding. Healthy Depression is the name of it, and you can read about it and get it at bookstores anywhere, especially online. Healthy Depression. Now, this morning.
Yes, sir.
At Devotion, you shared with our staff a fascinating personal story, which I teased the listeners with. Go ahead and tell that story, if you would.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I was sharing from Hebrews chapter 11 about the Heroes Hall of Faith. And I believe it's Hebrews 11:4 that says that Abel, although he's dead, his faith still speaks. And I had a neat experience this past semester at the college. I was teaching a systematic theology, or a class that had systematic theology in it. And we got to a section in the book where it talked about missions work and evangelism. And it made me think of my uncle, who I was named after, who did a lot of missions work in Africa and translated the Bible into one of the dialects of Swahili. And I actually had the book behind me on my bookshelf. So I was sitting there teaching this online class. I had all these students on a big screen in front of me with their little faces, you know, like a Zoom
right.
meeting thing. And as I was talking about it, I reached behind me and pulled the early version of the Bible out in Swahili and started showing it to the class and talking. And there was a guy in the class who got all animated, all excited. And I could tell he was all wanting to say something. So I said to him, you know, what's going on? What are you all excited about? And he proceeded to tell me that he was actually from the Belgian Congo or the Democratic Republic of Congo. And that about 70 years ago, his parents came to the Lord through having the Bible in their own language. And his grandparents were. And then his parents then got saved. And then he got saved. And then he was over there in Africa and felt led to come to America and go to Liberty University. And so here he was like 70, 80 years later, sitting in my class. He starts telling me about how my uncle's work 80 years ago led his family and ultimately him to the Lord. And then I'm sitting there all these years later going, oh my goodness, the faithfulness of my aunt and uncle going over there to Africa.
Wait, was it back in the 40s or 50s? Or?
Yes. Yeah, they graduated from Moody Bible Institute in 1938. And then they went over to Africa.
So in the 40s, during World War II, probably, and then yes. beyond, they're in the middle of the jungle, so to speak, in Africa.
Yes, literally, yes.
And translating the Bible,
yes.
like Wycliffe, right?
Yeah, of course, back then they didn't have all the computer stuff we have today to make
how were they? Do, how did they do it? This is your uncle.
Yes, uh-huh.
Yeah, how did he do this?
He told me it was a very slow process back then. I mean, you would, like, write down a word and then say to them, how do you say this word? And then did you, you know, put the English translation.
The whole Bible?
Yes. Yes.
Do you believe him?
Well, he's told me a lot of other true things over the years.
He's still alive?
No, he passed away at 105 a few years ago.
Wow, what a life.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Just, yeah, and so again, to put this picture in perspective, you're teaching a class online.
Yes.
When did this happen? Last
just this past spring, about 2 months
spring.
Ago.
And you're teaching the grandson?
Yes, the grandson.
Of a person from Africa who was saved because your uncle and aunt went to Africa in the 40s to translate, and as part of their mission work.
Yes.
This wasn't all their mission work, but was to translate the scriptures into the language.
Swahili. Uh-huh.
Swahili.
Yep, and that's a great example of
that's
Hebrews 11:4.
That's about the craziest small world story I've heard in a while.
It is.
Crazy in a sense that it's fascinating. Yeah.
And though they're dead, their faith still speaks.
That's right.
Amen.
And that's the challenge for every one of us. Everyone's writing a story somewhere by our, right. the way we live our lives. And
that's right.
And we dream about something like that happening in our own lives.
Amen.
Absolutely.
But it can.
And the challenge for us today as parents, as grandparents, is to live out that life of faith. And the impact that it has, not only our family members, but coworkers. A coworker is looking at you today, an unsaved coworker may be looking at you today and seeing how you respond to things that happen in your life.
That's right.
And that has an impact, and they pass that along.
That's right.
It's the way God works.
That's right. They're looking for hope and meaning and purpose in life, and they see it in you, and that opens up the door to share more.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we may not know until we get to eternity the impact of our lives on other people.
Absolutely.
You know, your uncle has passed away at 105, which is absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
But someday he's going to meet people in heaven
That's right.
who got saved as a result of the work that he was doing for the Lord on the mission field.
That's right.
Incredible.
Let me ask you one other question before we end this interview here, because I'm thinking there are a lot of parents and grandparents who have a teenager that they're worried about, are either people know, have friends or fellow church members who know they're going through this. Teenagers come to mind, but anybody can have what we call clinical depression, I guess you could say. But they're exhibiting these
symptoms
or, yeah, that you describe, and you know they lose interest in things that they were formerly interested in. They have no zeal or zest for life, seemingly. They sleep a lot, you said. They, yep. Anyway, what do you do if you're in that situation as a guardian, as a parent, as a grandparent? How can you help them?
Well, the number one thing is to try to create hope in that person, because you know they want to. Most people who are suicidal really don't want to die. They want the pain to end. They want it to get better. And when they believe it can't get better, that's when they take the flying leap off the bridge or whatever. And so the number one thing is to try to create hope and to try to create in them the idea that it can get better. And one of the first things I always do is I ask people, especially if they're a Christian, you know, what do you think God is teaching you through this process? What are you learning from this? And the moment they can identify something that God is doing, it redeems the horrible process. And so, and there becomes hope in that. And we see that in Romans chapter 5, verses 3 through 5. It talks about the testing of our faith develops perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope. That's what I always try to start with. Now, if it's more clinical and more severe, like we're talking about, you know, they might need a referral. They might need to go to someone in the field, hopefully a Christian who can help them to, overcome.
I just know we all hear these horror stories about parents who go, or grandparents, and they go, you know, I don't know what happened to my 15-year-old, but he's, you know, started doing this, that, or the other, or not wanting to do this, that, and the other, and they, you know, try to commit suicide or do commit suicide. It's just tragic, yeah, and sad.
Yeah, it is an epidemic in the country right now.
It's an epidemic?
Yeah.
Suicide?
Yes. Yeah.
Epidemic.
Yes. Okay.
Dr. David Jeremiah was dealing with this on his program this morning, the skyrocketing rates. I was going to ask you about that. What is it today? Why are the rates of suicide amongst young people going up?
Well, I mean, people speculate about that, and there can be a lot of different theories as to why, but the rates have gone up since COVID has happened. And
really?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. Statistically, they've gone up. And we believe that it's isolation. You know, we've been pulled apart from each other.
That makes sense.
But of course, now that COVID is starting to be over with, we're starting to get together more like this. You know, we don't have masks on right now or anything. But the younger people today, they're super connected with technology, you know, all the social media. But at the same time, they feel more disconnected than ever. They're more electronically connected, but they're less emotionally connected. And there's all the research shows there's also epidemic levels of loneliness, even though they're very connected. And so all of those factors contribute into the higher rates of depression.
Wow.
And also, if you want to get a little philosophical, I don't want to get too deep here, but I mean, the postmodernism that the kids are buying into these days, that there is no meaning and purpose in life, create your own meaning and purpose. And of course, that's empty. And people experience that emptiness when they start to really live it. And, you know, so all of that contributes.
Mm. Our hope is in Christ.
Absolutely.
That's where we would start. What Jesus did for us on the cross to give us life abundant and life eternal, but communicating that to somebody who's deeply depressed is oftentimes challenging. All right, thank you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
And so you're off for the summer, or do deans ever take time off?
We never take time off.
Okay. Okay. Well, listen, congratulations on being the dean of the School of Behavioral Sciences at Liberty University, and we wish you the very best.
Thank you so much.
And your book is titled Healthy Depression. And Dr. Kenyon, K-E-N-Y-O-N, last name K-N-A-P-P. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today's Issues is the name of the show. Tim, Fred, Chris, and Ray. Ray, you pastored for a long time, so you had to meet with a lot of families. You've seen this many times before, I'm sure, what Kenyon was describing.
This whole approach that he's giving sounds exactly right to me. His answer to the question about depression, sin could be involved. But, you know, he said, it's really brilliant, emotions are emotions are emotions. Read the book of Psalms and you'll see David really struggled. David wondered where God was, but Job the same way, and Habakkuk the same way. It's biblical. And every pastor, I don't care who you are, every pastor deals with the question of Christians going through a hard time, especially, and Tim, you put your finger on it, about dealing with young people under so much pressure today, so much evil cultural influence. So I thank God for Dr. Knapp and the good work he's doing in this. I got to say, Tim, I love the title of the book, Healthy Depression. There's two words that you normally, right. You don't put those together. It's a great title,
right.
Great concept.
I thought it was fascinating, too, with regards to the younger generation today, but not exclusively, the problem of electronic isolation, that you're connected through social media, but not with a human being sitting beside you. I saw an interesting video the other day where a mom and a family, the husband and the kids, they had to check in their cell phones before they sat down at the table. They had to put their cell phones over on the side before they sat down. Because I think we probably have all seen it at restaurants in the last few years. They come in, mom and dad, two or three kids, and they immediately pull out their cell phones while they're waiting for the food to come.
I'm guilty of that sometimes.
Me too. You better let you leave in the car.
True.
Because it's so easy. Boom. You want to
check in your cell phone so that you can talk.
Right. Talk and communicate.
You mean, mean we actually got to talk to each other now, friend? Yeah, what a radical idea.
Also, get outside and breathe some fresh air. And
do some
kind of activity.
Yes.
All right. That's what I tell Allison. You know, I need to go golf.
You got to go golf.
Otherwise, I might get depressed. You know what I'm saying?
And does she say leave your cell phone?
Well, then it's kind of a double-edged sword, because then I go to the golf course and I play and I get depressed. So, I mean, I don't know what to do exactly, you know, about the situation I find myself in.
What's your golf score?
Don't ask. That's inappropriate, Chris.
It's all really birdies. Personal. All birdies. No bogeys. All birdies. That's what I'm saying.
The first time I played a golf game on the computer back in the day with my brothers, I got like a 97 or something like that at the end of the game. And I was like, woohoo, I won. My brother was like,
starter. Well, you know, but we're laughing and having fun here. But I'm saying I think everybody needs some kind of release. I mean,
that's why I ride my bike, Tim.
Right. Mm-hmm. You ride your bike every day if you can.
That's exactly right.
And get some mental and exercise and get some blood flowing.
De-stress.
Yeah, a lot of people
I'm not going to be on my phone when I'm riding my bike.
Right.
Right?
And that, again, that's the point.
It drives me. I go to a gymnasium to exercise.
Yeah.
I leave my cell phone in the car.
Yeah.
But then there are people that get on the treadmill,
right,
and they got to have their cell phone in front of them.
No.
Give me a break.
I know. Well, you know, walking, a lot of people like to, like you say, bike ride. A lot of people fish.
Yeah.
So find something, at least, you know, to do it every day. But you need to find, everybody needs, I know some people who enjoy woodworking.
Yeah.
That's their therapy.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So, mm-hmm. Chris, what's yours?
I have a garden. My father-in-law helped me put in a garden last year. It was the first one I ever did. And praise God. God and my father-in-law helped provide a lot for us last year. I started another one this year. And I like
by
being
yourself?
Out there. Yes. I like being out there early morning when it's kind of cool out, you know.
So what do you got? You got a garden right now?
I do.
What do you got going on there?
Tomatoes, okra, watermelon, cantaloupe.
Hey, will you bring me a watermelon?
And yes, sir, I will. It's yellow. Is that okay? It's a yellow watermelon?
I don't have it.
There are different colors of watermelons.
You don't want to have to make this a racial thing.
We're not discriminating. Watermelon, we'll eat it, right?
Some people that don't realize there are different color watermelons, they think something's wrong with it when they see a
yellow. No, I've seen yellow watermelon. I eat yellow watermelon.
You put salt on it?
No, I used to when I was a kid. I did. Ray, did you put salt on your watermelon?
Yeah, still do sometimes.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I put But I don't eat. I just enjoy the napkins.
Yeah, now, do yours have seeds?
Yes, sir.
That you got to spit
and
in.
And I have cucumber as well.
So you got, let's regularize these vegetables and fruits?
Tomatoes.
Tomatoes cucumber. Is a fruit, by the way.
It is.
A tomato is a fruit.
Okra, squash.
It should be a fruit. But
zucchini.
Yeah, watermelon, cantaloupe.
Yes.
Has your okra come in?
It has. I tell you what, if they ever discover plants on other planets, I guarantee you one of them is okra because that stuff will grow anywhere that it's in the ground.
Kind of like Bermuda grass. Huh?
Yes.
Once it'll start,
okra will take
everything
over.
Else may die, but that okra is still there.
It's going to take over the world.
Just fry it up. That's some good eat.
That's it.
Fried okra.
The food of heaven.
All right. Well, we'll be back in 5 minutes with more of today's issues on AFR. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.